This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, and I'm with Johnny. Johnny, brother, you doing okay today?
I'm doing quite good, quite good.
That's awesome, man. Well, we got to pass some news. Found out Jimmy Snuka passed away today. People have their takes on because of the murder situation and all this stuff, but the bottom line, he touched a lot of people's lives. I mean, he has a family, so I think people should respect that. But you know what? Do you need to mourn the man? No, but this is a wrestling show. So, you're growing up in the Northeast. Oh. What was your snooker memory?
Well, gosh, for all my great snooker memories, you can tune into Titans of Wrestling, the current episodes and the upcoming ones, because that's where I'm going to really been sharing them.
Yeah.
To your point about, look, let's face it, he murdered the woman, okay? We all know it happened, and he's gone now, and he died of stomach cancer, which is awful.
Shitty way to go, yeah.
And you know what? Okay, you want to say it's karma, but, and I know that, but at the same time, childhood hero, and it's hard to, juggle both things, but I just choose to be like, again, I'm not going to cry over this, but I'm going to think back and think about me and Joey, me and Wolfman, and how we had the shared experience before we even knew each other. Our shared experience was Jimmy Snuka got us super into wrestling. Like, we both watched it here and there, but I started becoming obsessed when Jimmy Snuka was the star there, and feuding with Morocco. And I'd seen him as a bad guy, this, that, but it was that when that's when I went whole hog. And there was a whole generation of kids in the Northeast who had that exact same experience. And a lot of it was due also to every freaking magazine had his face on it covered in blood.
Yeah.
And the name Superfly, and he's all muscular, and we're just like, oh, it was literally like a superhero. So, rest in peace, Jimmy Snuka. Hey, you know what? The license plates of my work truck, we were asked 2 years ago to pick a custom name, a custom license plate.
Did you do Superfly for the you're in the bike industry?
I totally did. Yeah, well, it had to be it had to be something to do with pest control. Everyone's coming up with these shitty puns, and I'm trying to think of something that wouldn't be embarrassing as fuck. And I go, Superfly, and we submitted it. It spelled more like Superfly, and it came back. Someone already had that, because I'm like, there's got to be a pimp somewhere on Colfax in Denver who already has Superfly. So I just flipped it around and used an I instead of the Y and shit. And that's what I drive around with every day. And before we get on, the funniest thing, a month or two ago, I'm stuck on the highway in construction. And the flag guy comes walking up to my truck, and I'm like, what does this fucking hillbilly want? And roll down the window, and he's like, hey, saw your license plate. Superfly Snuka? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, awesome, I love the Superfly. And I'm like, oh, okay, that doesn't happen every day. And a little bit about wrestling. And then he went back to his job waving a fucking flag and turning the sign around in the construction. So funny. Yeah. He touched a lot of people's memories, and just prefer to think about that.
Yeah, and you know what?
There
you want to watch the matches, and you're on, and you're subscribed to NWA On Demand. There's a few on there, so I know. I remember one in particular was him in Patera, and it was a really good one. So I don't have them in front of me, so I don't want to go pull it up. But you can also look at my listing over at ProWrestlingOnly.com. Yeah. where I'm pretty much up to date. I think I might not have like these last five matches we're discussing, but I'm up to date up to that with all the matches that are on the survey. So
and to, again, to the point, people don't, a lot of people don't quite realize just how over he was in WWF around in 1983, 84. It was
insane,
you know. So yeah, that's why, I mean, this guy was one of the most over guys in the world for about 2 years. So
yep. All right, man, well, let's get into the action of the releases this week. The first one we're going to look at is Chavo Guerrero versus Killer Tim Brooks from Houston, of course, May 28th, 1982. And what were your thoughts on this one, Johnny?
It was okay. It wasn't great, but it was fine. Killer Tim Brooks has not quite gotten to sleaziest, dirtiest looking guy in the history of professional wrestling at this point. His hair's short. In a few years, that's him. I remember seeing him on those magazine covers because I never saw him wrestle, you know, for a long time. And I just looked at him. I was like, that guy's just gross. The grossest looking motherfucker I've ever seen. And then when I got World Class, and I'd see him every now and then on World Class Classic, and I'd be like, ugh, you know, this guy just, he unnerved me how dirty and smelly he looked. He really did. When I was a kid, it really bothered me. And he's a great heel. You know, he's limited in the ring, and a lot of people say he sucks. I don't think he sucks. Here he's, I thought, pretty good doing what he's doing, you know, which was, there's a lot of like, look, no, I'm not going to cheat. I promise you I'm not going to cheat. And Chavo's not falling for it at first. In fact, the first time he goes for a handshake, Chavo just like jerks his thumb back, like, beat it, you know, like, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. So, you know, you're not here to fool me. But then eventually he does accept a handshake. Although, you know, maybe he's a changed man, Paul Bosch says. And then right away he takes a cheap shot, pisses off Chavo to let him know that he suckered him. So I always like that bit of, like, psychology, I just got in your head, you know, so I like that kind of thing. But I was a bit more interested in hearing about that apparently Chavo is feuding with Manny Fernandez, who's just had a heel turn and turned his back on Chavo, his tag team partner.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, really? A heel Manny Fernandez?
Yeah.
I, you know, here I've only seen heel Manny Fernandez from Crockett, you know, so that got me the appetite whetted for something that we got we got the old switcheroo, by the way. We'll get to that a little bit later, but yeah, you know, it was okay. Chavo, you know, fucking totally came off badass in it, you know, which is always good.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really, Killer Tim Brooks is a guy who couldn't, he's like, they always say Ricky Steamboat could never be a heel. There's no way Killer Tim Brooks could be a babyface.
I mean, I can't see it.
I mean, unless you're the world's worst booker. He just was never that. And yeah, he's a guy. He's okay. He just goes through the, I mean, he just was never a great worker. He was more of like a gimmick. And he worked his gimmick really well. So on that aspect, he was a great worker. Where he knew the gimmick, knew this, but as a guy in between the ropes having a great match, no. But he's a guy who could go in and work his feuds and drew a little money for the territories. You know, I mean, we saw one really good match with him here earlier when it was him and Dick Murdoch tagged up, and it was Jose Lothario, and I think it was Tiger Conway Jr., and that was a really good tag match. And but, I mean, when you think about it, you have freaking Dick Murdoch and Jose Lothario on opposite sides of the rings. You might as well, I mean, that's divine intervention when it comes to wrestling, if you ask me.
Yeah, but he's, you know, I think he's again, like you said, he's really good at cheating.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an art form in and of itself.
Good heel psychology, and when, you know, when you're building about the heel being a cheat and stuff, you know, he was a character, that he, every territory he went to, he got over and drew a little money. Always had a place on a card. I never really liked him when he was on top of cards, but I really liked him as a mid card or semi type of guy. I liked him in Portland. Thought him and Piper had a pretty good feud. But here, it was just, the match was just kind of there. See Chavo working the arm early, and and you know, Brooks cutting him off by using roughhouse tactics. So I mean, his heel psychology is right there. You know, does a heel need to be a great grappler? No, but he needs to know. He had good timing. He knew how to throw a good punch. He knew, you know, had good heel psychology to get the fans pissed and hating him. So he knew what to do. And you see him working Chavo's arm in return, and then Chavo reverses it. He's back in control. And he's back to the arm. We get some back and forth action, but overall the match was kind of there. Killer Tim Brooks isn't the type of guy who's going to have a great match with a Chavo Guerrero, who at the, you know, really was state of the art at the time. But they could have Brooks could have worked on top a little bit more interesting and been a little bit more engaging. And but overall, nothing offensive to it. Just wasn't wow inducing. The next match, though, I really enjoyed. We got a young Hacksaw Duggan against Frank Monty, who we've seen. May 28th, 1982. I thought this was a good meat and potatoes match. I mean, again, not blow away or anything like incredible. It's Hacksaw Duggan as the heel, and Monte here is the babyface, and Duggan's the up and coming heel, while Monte's kind of like that journeyman guy who has credibility here in Houston, kind of like a Johnny Rods in a way in the WWF at the time. You know, we see Monte with the shine early, working the arm, and Duggan doesn't want to be on the ground. He wants this to be vertical because he's so much bigger and he's stronger. But Monty uses the arm drag as a weapon, keeping him off track and keeping him off his feet, which I really thought was good psychology. But Duggan's strength is too much, and he's like a clubber in, just, you know, forearms, clotheslines, punches, you know, just typical Duggan, but as a heel. Monte's working underneath, but he's cut off. Duggan using his weight, and again, Monte keeps him off balance with the arm drag, so clearly Monte's using, like, you know, typical, you know, babyface moves, or like the arm drag, you know. And he's taking to Duggan. He hammerlock takes down Jim to the mat, and Duggan and Monty go back and forth again, but finally Duggan takes him to the floor, beats him up a little bit, and we get this really awesome finish. But I thought this was a good, nice and forth match, in a way, where you didn't have Duggan guzzle Monte, where he keeps his credibility as a guy who can put over up and coming talent. But Duggan, you know, showed that he can go and has a future in the territory. What were your thoughts here?
Now I see him in Wrong Glass. That's all I can think of, the Barney Miller song. And I see Frank Monty. I have nothing much to add to the match. It was what it was. But we got some great Paul Bosch here, and we're gonna be getting a lot of great Paul Bosch.
Yeah.
But he starts off. I guess it's a holiday weekend. And he starts everything with he's like, "We suggest to you to please drive carefully. We can't afford to lose any of you." I was like, "Oh, that's nice. Drive carefully this holiday weekend." But then he starts talking about how the offices of the wrestling company are going to be closed on Monday for the holiday. But then he gets very upset about it. He's like, well, but not our sponsors. Our sponsors, he names the two sponsors. He goes, "Our sponsors are, no, they're open. Please do not misunderstand me. You know, the sponsors are open. We're closed, not them." okay, you got it. And then he brings up having to kiss Gino's shoe.
Yeah.
And he starts talking about all the great letters that were sent and phone calls where people like commiserating with him. And he says, "It was very, very nice of you. It's very touching. But I guess I talked my way into it, and it was the only way out to go," you know, which I thought was really good. He was like, "Hey," he was like, "sometimes I got a big mouth," and basically what he said, and it was really cool. And then when he was calling the match, I love the typical people stereotyping anything that says New York. As Duggan goes running into the corner, and Monty gets out of the way, and he goes, "The wild New Yorker lunged like he was dodging a taxi." Like, he's from Glen Falls. He's not from fucking Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, they're dodging taxis in Glen Falls. But, you know, you hear New York and you go there. But then he redeems himself with the best joke on Duggan's expense, because Duggan does his foot stomp thing.
Yeah, this
six,
is great.
Six, yeah, six times. He goes, well, he counted to six that time. And I lost my shit. I was like, that's not even ironically funny or Paul Bosch, you know, somebody's laughing at just what he does. That's a really funny joke.
Right.
Really good. I died. He counted to six like a fucking performing horse. So, yeah, I enjoyed the Bosch stuff far more than anything else. But again, I also love seeing young heel Duggan.
Yeah.
You know, just, I like seeing guys go, well, that guy's going to be one of the biggest stars in the world someday.
Yep. It's really neat. It really is neat to see him. And he's really fun as a young, up-and-coming heel. I mean, all the stuff we've seen in Southwest Championship Wrestling from him, he's really engaging. And you can definitely see he's like a Bruiser Brody protege. And you see a lot of Bruiser. And then actually when he gets to Mid-South, he actually becomes a way better brawler than Bruiser Brody ever was. And probably end up
wrestler.
Yeah, and probably drew more money overall in the long run for the WWF, you know.
It's pretty impressive. And I wanted to point this out because I thought this was telling. I was listening to a Doug Loves Movies podcast the other day, and somehow this movie that just came out recently called Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
They came up and someone said the joke, like, are there any real hacksaws in it? And then someone said, yeah, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He's the key grip. That makes sense. If Hacksaw Jim Duggan was the key grip for hacksaws, someone's got to keep all those hacksaws in line.
Hell yeah.
And so it was all these young comics, and there was nobody on this panel was like, who? They all knew who Hacksaw Jim Duggan was just as a pop reference. Culture reference. So that really tells you just how, for anyone who's like, yeah, no, he never won a belt in WWE, who cares?
Yeah.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan is a kind of, he closely got to household name.
Yeah, essentially he was like the number two babyface, really. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the guy who usually got the heel ready for a Hogan run. We saw it with Andre. Jake. I mean, he'd go through a bunch of different guys who Hogan was about Earthquake, or he'd either face Hogan or they face Duggan on the way down. You know,
Andre faced him on the way down. Yeah.
So it was one or the other, but a lot of times he would be the guy who put him over in a big key angle or something like that.
And he was easily memorable. The tough guy, the ho.
Shit.
You know, anyone who goes, oh, it's all hokey and shit. Yeah, people now remember that shit 40 years later.
Damn straight. I got my picture taken with him, we did the ho. Fuck you.
What was her name?
Oh, God. Ba-dum-bump. If we only had a drop machine.
Was Sunny? Was Sunny at this convention?
Yeah, no, she was not.
Oh, okay.
Oh, jeez. But hey, we'll move on from there. And speaking of heel turns and promos, we get a Manny Fernandez Black Gordman match, but we get Manny on the stick. Look like he's trying to channel a little bit of Dusty as a heel. It felt like to me. I'm not sure. What were you feeling here?
I love this. I don't know who he's channeling. To me, he's channeling fucking Manny Fernandez because I love Manny Fernandez. He is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I think me and Rob Naylor are like the two biggest Manny Fernandez fans.
And I'm up there, sir. I might want to point out. You're in
the club, too.
Yeah.
I just always thought he was awesome. And so apparently he just turned heel. And he... He goes, you simple-minded people. You know, I had to say to myself, you know, why am I'm hanging around with this Chavo Guerrero? And I had to say to myself, Manny, what kind of dummy are you? What's wrong with you? I'm like, that's great. And he's like, and then all you lettuce pickers out there.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell is a lettuce picker?
Oh, it's migrant workers.
Okay.
Mexicans.
Well, I know that, but I just thought it was a funny saying, you know?
Oh, no, I've heard that before.
Oh, okay, I never have, okay.
Let's figure. I mean, it's a rare racial epithet, but it exists. Is he makes the differentiation. I'm a Tex-Mexican.
Yeah.
You know, you're not one of these Mexicans. I was born in America. You know, we're Tex-Mexicans. We look down on you. which is a thing. I know that's a thing. And I was like, wow, that's a cool way to go with almost local racism, local stereotype sort of thing, between people of the same culture. And I'm like, that's very interesting. And I'm sure that got super heat.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I bet what's even more interesting when you think about it is Manny's feuding with Chavo Guerrero. Eddie and Art Barr did the same gimmick in Mexico in 93 and 94 when they got super heat, where they were, they were Americans and stuff.
Right. But he's like, when I'm done with you, you'll be back on the side of the road selling burritos. Or maybe you'll be a tune-up man or a lube man at a filling station, And then he starts going, and now I hear there's another guy coming back around who I got a problem with, and that's Mil Máscaras. And then it cuts. I was like, oh, I wanted to hear him go off on Mil Máscaras. But then it goes right to the match with him and Gordman. And I was thinking, Black Gordman I must be a babyface in this match for some reason, based on the promo. And the first thing you hear is Paul Bosch go, Manny Fernandez in the ring, a real favorite with the crowd.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, wait, no, this is he's a babyface here. And for a minute or two, it took the wind out of my sails because I was expecting that character to now wrestle. But it got over it real quick when you realize Manny Fernandez, even as a babyface, wrestles like kind of like a bad guy anyway.
Yeah, he's so aggressive. And
he's totally aggressive. But this was a great Paul Bosch line here that could be easily misconstrued, Pete, depending on where you say this. You pound a man in the same place over and over, and it's going to get tender. Oh, yeah, you're damn right, Paul. and of course, the power slam finisher Manny uses looked fucking awesome. I love it when he whips that out. And Bosch was audibly impressed. Like, oh, well, that's a body slam, he calls it. And 1, 2, 3. The match is fine. But any opportunity to watch Manny Fernandez do anything, pretty much, and I'm there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was a good match. Not blow away. I loved Black Gordon's sell of the atomic drop, where he just totally oversells, and I loved it. Gordon showing his technical prowess, and we see this really nice ankle pick, and he starts working the ankle over but short lived. But then Gordon goes after the arm work, and again it looks good and stuff, but again it's short lived. He does a nice abdominal stretch. In a fun spot, I thought Manny does a rolling body scissors, and while Gordman's trying to escape using the ankle, really fun stuff. But, Manny just finishes it up with the power slam. I thought they had a good match, and, yeah, I'm looking forward, though, to getting some footage of some heel Manny. Really can't go wrong. But, hey, man, why don't we take a break here, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaySimulation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySimulation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and it's like Midget Mania here in Houston. And you said this one line off camera. I don't want to steal it from you, so I'll let you have it. But I was tempted to steal it from you.
Please go ahead. I probably forgot it already.
Well, the fact that you felt that Paul Bosch was having so much fun watching the first I'll let you do it. I don't want to steal it.
I posted that. Okay, I gotcha.
Okay. bring it up on the air. I loved it. But the first one we're looking at is Tiny Tom versus Cowboy Lang for May 22nd, 1981, and... it was weird because there was two midget matches on the show, this one, and then these guys worked again in a tag match.
I think I know why.
And maybe we will. Why don't you talk about this thing? Because Paul Bosch seemed like he was in absolutely heaven.
Paul Bosch, well, let's get this out of the way first of all. Paul Bosch is having the time of his life. He thinks this is the funniest thing he's ever fucking seen. He respects them as athletes. Don't get me wrong, because he gets that clear too. But all the shtick, he's laughing his ass off, and it almost – I know better than this, but it almost felt like it was the first time he had ever booked midgets and finally did it and just thought it was great because he was laughing like he had never seen this before.
Yeah, I know. He was like, hawk heaven.
I mean, it was when they would do the shtick, some shtick on the referee that you've seen a million times, he goes, look at me, he fell for it. And I'm like he'd never seen this before. So he's either the best actor ever, or maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it starts again. All these little kids are running up to the ring because this is, you know, freak show time. You know, they're going to see these midgets in person. And they get up there and they look at Cowboy Lang and they say, that guy's got a huge cock. Huge guy, because
that's legendary. Yeah,
Ric Flair has told this story all about Cowboy Lang has a huge, huge hog. And we're gonna get more into that when we see him and Scott Casey as a team, because that's sexy, ladies. Like, the ladies are listening to this, right. And then Tiny Tim.
That's why it was
Tiny Tom. Tiny Tim. You know, it was Christmas a few weeks ago.
Yeah, a few years ago.
And Scrooge. I wrote down, Tiny Tom's name stinks. Cowboy Lang sounds cool. Tiny Tom. And then I'm looking at Tiny Tom, and I came up with a theory. Because, like, what does he look like? And I'm like, oh, he looks like a Von Erich. You know, he had the shaggy hair, and he horse face. It looked very muscular, you know. I'm like, he looks like a Von Erich, and it hit me. Jack Von Erich. It was a big cover up. He did not die when he was 3 years old in the puddle. He was actually a midget. Yeah,
terrible.
Hold on. Hold on. He was actually a midget. And Fritz, and we all know, you know, Fritz could be, you know, he's like, no son of man is going to be a midget. And they exiled him. They took care of him financially, and they exiled him. And to get back, he got back into the business. And he got into the business because he was going to prove something to his fucking old man. And he had to adopt the name Tiny Tom. And then we could go from there.
Have to no-sell this garbage.
That's fantastic. That's
terrible. And then you steal Jake Roberts' life story a little bit, too.
Whoa. How's Jake Roberts?
Well, he got into the business thing?
He didn't throw him out. It's an old story about Dilly. I'm going to stick it to my old man. And anyway, so Paul Bosch calls a Cowboy Lang. He's like, he's a real solid midget type citizen. Okay? Midget type.
Yeah, I know. That was great.
And then he says, ladies and gentlemen, don't adjust your sets.
I love that one. Yeah, this
don't. Don't adjust your sets. They really are this small.
Yeah.
And
I love that line.
And, did I mention that Cowboy Lang is a giant cock?
You have.
Okay. But what they were doing, it hit me, because we don't see this anymore, of course. This is an old vaudeville routine, basically. Back in the days of vaudeville, and they have certain kinds of routines, and wrestling pretty much is kind of that. Or at least old-time wrestling. Here's the ladies, and here's the midgets, and here's this. And old vaudeville would have routines that would never really deviate much from what the gags were, and they lasted forever. And eventually vaudeville died, you know, and then so this sort of thing died, you know. So we're looking at it historically. It's very interesting, especially when it's done well. And they're doing it very, very well. And then you got Paul Posh. I put down, he's laughing like De Niro in Cape Fear. Just... the time of his life. And he's also explaining, he also does this one. Because he hits him with a tiny town with some sort of head drop move, pile driver or something. And he goes, if he bounces him on his head, I'll make him even shorter. And he's short enough as it is. Thanks, Groucho. And he then actually uses the term midget strength. And I got down on my knees and prayed at the altar of Paul Vash. Because he's like, yeah, look at that. That's midget strength. Because he does keep pointing out, he's like, they look tiny, but because they're the same size, when they hit each other, it hurts just as much as when the big guys do it. And he gets back into that. And I always thought, I was like, that's, as he's laughing his ass off, he's having to get over the fact that, no, these are legitimate athletes. You know, they're having fun, but, oh, when they hit each other, that's for real. It hurts. And he, and we'll see it more in the tag, he falls in love with Cowboy Lang, and not because of the dick. He really, really, well, look at the size of that hog on him. He's gonna hang out and try to get his, you know. Anyway, but he's known all about, he's like, how charismatic he is, and what a great athlete he is. And we'll get into the tag match, but he's really sold on Cowboy Lang as a performer.
Yeah, I'm surprised you missed the announcer getting these guys confused.
What's his name? Okay, yeah, he mixes. I forgot this guy. What's his fucking name? Oh, Kempa Kaiser.
Yeah, he immediately has Paul Bosch just rolling, because, like, how can he not get the Cowboy right?
That's the vet. You're right, Pete. That's the best line, because he gets them mixed up. But one of them's wearing a fucking cowboy hat.
And he's wearing not just a cowboy hat, an authentic cowboy
hat. And I hear Bosch laughing, and then the fact that what he's laughing at is that Kemper Kaiser is an old drunk who's an idiot. Because that's exactly what he says. He's like, oh, well, Kempa Kaiser having a little trouble. I don't know why. And one of them's clearly a cowboy. It's very clear. And I'm like, oh, thank Paul Bosch, you are awesome. Because that's where he went with it. He totally shit on Kempa Kaiser.
God, that was great.
Who seemed a bit intoxicated.
Yeah, he tried to cover it up with a joke. And this is whatever the ref was. I forget the guy's name. I thought off the top of my head. I liked this match. I thought the train wrestling was really well done early. And Cowboy Lang actually working World of Sports spots, which is just nuts when you think about it. The comedy spots were awesome in here. Just overall, just entertainment. That's, you know, vaudeville. Gotcha. I mean, it was just totally entertaining. I liked Lang. He actually, for a midget, they're actually using leverage spots, which I thought was nuts. We see him even deliver a vertical suplex, and Bosch just laughing his ass off in this is just superb and icing on the cake. I thought this was like a legit 3-star match, and if we were doing like a Best of Houston thing, like on the Death Valley Driver sets, we always try to put a midget match on. I guarantee, I think both of these probably would have been put on.
I remember that, and I always appreciated that, and a lot of people always like roll their eyes and, you know, get all haughty about it, like, yeah, okay, fine, but like, sure, they're working good for midgets. And I was just like, fuck you. Midget wrestling was a thing, okay? It existed, and they were performers, and, you know, to just immediately think it's all shit, you know, is just, I don't know, it bothers me, because it's just like anything else in wrestling, when they're doing it really well, it's good.
Yeah. And Cowboy Lang is a guy who
he's great. He's
coming across as a really good worker on from the 80s, from what we have, because there's not like tons of midget matches out there, mind you. And that leads us into the tag, and what you thought, Paul Bosch was having so much fun, he did what?
Okay. I was thinking that on this card, because it's the same night. This is from the same card. That there was a scheduled singles match between Eddie Mansfield, the Continental Lover, by the way, and future star of 2020, versus Scott Casey. And Paul Bosch was going, he was so entertained by these midgets. And at the same time, he was thinking, I think we need to let, I want to see more midgets. And I think the crowd wants to see more midgets. And I've been looking for something to spice up this Casey Mansfield match. It's just nothing. I got it. Boys, come here. He's like, you're going to be working with the midgets. What? He's like, listen to me. And that's when Paul Bosch got all mob boss on him and shit. You know, he's like, I'm telling you right now, you're working with the goddamn midgets. You hear that crowd out there? You hear that? We're putting out more midgets right now, and I don't want to hear anything about it. And Scott Casey was probably like, oh, okay. And Eddie Mansfield was like, whatever you say, boss. And he's like, good, Eddie, I want you to really make them look good out there. Whatever you say, Mr. Bosch, because you're Paul Bosch. You're the king of Houston. Because Eddie Mansfield especially went out there and just performed his ass off.
Mansfield's a guy, maybe Matt D and I were talking, and we've seen a few matches now of his here in Houston. He's pretty damn good. He's not ever going to be like the world champion because he doesn't have that look, but dang, he I thought he was a very good, could be an easily top three of the card heel type of guy. And here, he was the best worker, and Cowboy Lang was the best worker on his side. And their dynamic was freaking fantastic in this. And I thought Casey and Tom were good here too, don't get me wrong. But my God, all it was, I thought the dynamic between Mansfield and Lang working spots was great. I love the Tiny Tom, Eddie Mansfield teasing the
can't get along.
Yeah, that was awesome. Great. I liked Lang even doing like the old Fantastics where they'd twist his hand at Mansfield, like, are you gay?
No, yeah, he's calling him a faggot. The midget, that's not a spare word. This is old-time wrestling is what it was. I'm looking at a midget basically calling another guy faggot in the ring in tights. It's insane, but it's of its time. But it's just, it's hilarious.
It was. I'm like, holy shit. And I thought Lang's punches to Tiny Tom looked stiff as hell. It was absolutely stiff as hell.
I'm sure they were.
Yeah, this was so much fun. 3 stars, just all gaggles of laughed, and they had heat, and they had comedy. This was almost like, honestly, if they weren't midgets, this feels like it would be like a Memphis Underneath tag match. And and I mean that in a good way, because it would be, you know, instead of midget comedy, it'd be just regular comedy. But here it was midget comedy, but they also did it with regular comedy. It was great.
And if Bill Dundee was on the card, who could tell the difference?
Yeah, there we go. And then Paul Bosch explaining the difference between war. Aren't these actually dwarfs?
I still have notes here on this one, buddy. So, and that's one of them. So.
Stop stealing your thunder.
No. In fact, I'll go to that first because you hit it and it's hilarious. But he said, because I actually had to write the whole thing down. And he's saying midgets. And then, so he goes, and of course, we all know that they're actually dwarves, but it's called midget wrestling. So anyone that's in it is going to be called a midget. That's just the way it is. And he goes, and by the way, that's how they like it. He's like, yeah, that's how they like it because you said so, Mr. Bosch.
Oh, man.
But it's so funny. He's like, that's what they like. You know, so, you know, what? And we all know that's the whole point. He's like, they don't like that. But he's saying, look, dwarf wrestling on the marquee isn't going to sell a fucking ticket. Midget wrestling is. That's what it's fucking called. Deal with it. Loved it. Then, Paul loves Lang. He also gets this line. After Cowboy Lang does a toss of a Tiny Tom, he goes, if there's an Olympic event for throwing a midget, we just sold a world record set.
And this is where midget tossing was discovered.
Well, I thought about that, but just the thing is, well, if it was, and I pictured it, you know, on the Olympics, you know, it's midget tossing, you know, America's great at it. But He also gets in the line because he's talking about the tag ins and tag outs, but he uses touches.
Right.
So he goes, well, so that's what happens when a big fella touches with a little man. But
it sounds like a special Different Strokes.
There's a very special Different Strokes on that one. Then he gets Dudley in the bicycle shop and gives him one. And then the big guy from WKRP does a little finger diddling, and it's very.
Oh, that's right. He was in it. My bad. Yeah.
It was it, man. He was. It didn't help his career too. But anyway, speaking of TV, picture this: a 1980s one-hour like detective show, like they used to have, like Hardcastle and McCormick and that kind of thing. Matt Houston, Riptide, and it's Scott Casey and Cowboy Lang, and they're private detectives. They're private detectives, and they drive a cool car, and solve crimes and dance with the ladies at night. And they're both like super fucking ladies, man.
Yeah. Sounds like Sam Houston almost.
Well, Sam Houston.
Oh, no, Matt Houston. Matt Houston.
Matt Houston didn't have a midget. You
That's
see?
Right. But they were, but similar. If they had a midget, it'd be like Matt Houston.
Matt Houston was also a millionaire. He's a Texas oil man. But like, my mom loves some Matt Houston. I can, because it was on the same night as Hardcastle and McCormick, and we all want, that's what we like. But yes, Scott Casey would definitely be dressed like Matt Houston, and he'd have his partner. Maybe imagine almost like a Miami Vice with a midget, but in Houston with these two guys. Could have been big. Could have been big, because they were like, they complimented each other amazingly. They're both like muscular guys with mustaches, you know, or ladies.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
men.
Cowboy Lang, if this was Mexico, he would have been like Cowboy Lang's. I mean, could have been Scott Casey's mini.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But then, of course, it ends with Mansfield. I thought this was hilarious because the good guys win, and Tiny Tom is pushing Mansfield, and Mansfield just looks at him like, are you fucking serious? And he's like, yeah, rah, rah. And he takes a swing at him. And Mansfield, with just this look of eh on his face, just punches the midget right in the fucking face. Just takes one shot at me. He's like, hit me. I hit you right fucking back, shorty. Knocks it down, then body slams him and leaves. And I thought that was amazing.
Amazing it was. It was awesome.
He didn't sell the punch from the midget or even react to it. The midget punched him, and he just looked right at him and punched him right in the face and knocked him on the floor. I popped so hard for that. This, you know, I love midget wrestling. This is my jam, and I think it's awesome that something like this, that's totally my jam, and then we get next, we're gonna be talking about something a bit more up your alley, but I totally loved it too, and we get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what makes it so good. That's why I really liked all these releases this week, because they're all different in a way, but unique, and they really flowed. And you got it was like the flavor of Houston wrestling. And with that note, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back for the main event of Atiza, Gina Hernandez versus Chavo Guerrero for Gino's junior heavyweight title.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we're looking at the main event. And like I said, it's Gino Hernandez versus Chavo Guerrero for the U.S. Junior Heavyweight title. And holy crap, does the thing start out hot. Not in the ring. Gino, being the heat magnet he is in a fist fight with a fan seconds into this footage. The cops are swarming. Another fan tries to jump Gino, but the cop like chunks him, and they bring these jabronis to the back, and I'm like, holy crap. You were just amazed when you saw this.
The footage, it starts, and the first thing is just Gino pounding a fan, sitting in the corner, bam, bam, bam. He's pounding him, and it's chaos. And it gets pulled apart, and then the guy's fucking dumb friend wearing his stupid trucker hat with a giant fucking pot belly, and he tries to go after Gino, and Gino just looks at him, and cops drag his dumb ass away. And it was almost like he was saying, hey, man, you didn't have to hit him that hard.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I'm Gino Hernandez, bitch.
I'm Gino Aladdin. I'm
But I do. And it was funny because one thing you could tell was that Gino was subduing him while trying to get in a few licks. Because one of the things these guys do learn is just try to subdue, you know, and then if you get your licks in, you get your licks in. It was exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he beat the fuck out of him.
And it changed the whole dynamic of, like, the upcoming match, because it actually, for the first 5 or 10 minutes, it had an eerie heat. Like, the fans wanted to kill Gino. and you know what I'm talking about? There's a difference between heat
and then dangerous heat.
And I was hearing dangerous heat here. And I'm watching this, and I'm still tingling from the fight. And then we have Lou Refez as a special ref. The crowd is 1,000,000,000% behind Chavo Guerrero.
Okay, let me put it this way. You know, at this time, and when I was a teenager, I cheered for the heels, and I would have definitely wanted to cheer for Gino. In this crowd, I would have kept my big fat mouth fucking shut.
Yeah, and it wants to lynch Gino here. They don't want him to go home and make it out alive. And, I mean, honestly, this heat has that just scary heat. Like, it, like, I just can't try to explain it. There was heat where you're boo-boo. This was... like, it was almost like, it'd be like, I mean, I don't want to, I was going to say something so tactless, so I'm not, but this is just.
Dude, I already said they faked Jack Von Erich's death.
I was what I was going to say, it would have, but let me just put it this way, this was legit, like, this is like almost like a race riot. It felt like for a second. That's not what I was. My classless one was going to be.
Oh well, but there was a huge Mexican contingent in that crowd. And they all wanted the guy named Hernandez dead. I don't think so. You don't have to worry about a race. Like, Gino is, and as we've seen from what we're seeing, we've seen heels.
Yeah.
We've seen effective heels here in this Houston footage. We have not seen anyone like fucking Gino Hernandez who can get that crowd so angry.
Yep.
So angry.
Incredible. And then we get this. Then we see Gino starts on the neck, and I really like that he's using this like front face lock, which normally I'm like, that's like the laziest move you could do. You can't do a whole lot of work from here and there. But the way Gino does it, he's cranking on it, and it makes it look really impressive and really hurdy, and on top of it, it's negating Chavo's speed advantage. And then we get this really incredible belly-to-belly hope spot by Chavo, and I'm loving the slow build here because everything they're doing matters. And these guys are arm drags back and forth on each other, and the crowd is popping huge because the arm drag's getting over, because everything is mattering to these guys, and the build is incredible. Gino is smart and realizes how freaking dangerous the heat is at this point, and he's like, I better calm it down, and he takes Chavo down to the mat and with the headlock, and he says pretty much Gino smothering Chavo, trying to take the crowd down because he wants to live. And Chavo makes this huge comeback, and we see Chavo work this Rito Romero special with his, which is really interesting. It looks like it should, like, cripple Gino's back. I mean, it was so stiff looking. And then he has him up in the Rito Romero special, and he does his arm drag and onto the arm, which I thought was freaking awesome. And then we see this figure four octopus. I thought it was tremendous from Chavo, and I thought, wow, this is really high. I mean, Chavo's just really pulling everything out of this bag, and you're like, wow, this guy's an incredible, so state-of-the-art ahead of his time. But Gino steals the fall. And then the second fall was short, but man, really sweet, and Chavo equalizes it. In the third fire, Chavo's on fire. But, oh, Chavo makes a mistake, and Gino's all over it. And Chavo returns the favor and holds the trunks for the pin. I love it. I wouldn't be surprised because these guys wrestled a few times. I don't know for sure, but I bet this is payback. I bet in their first time they wrestled, I bet you Gino went over holding the trunks, and I bet this was a payback spot. But I don't know for sure. But I'm not gonna hold it either way. I just loved it. And then post match, Gino lays out Chavo, and then Thez and the babyfaces. Gino still has the title, but the babyfaces and Thez take it from him. The post-match is just incredible and heated. And I'm a guy who takes crowd reactions as being very important. The crowd here was just insane and on fire. This had a really epic feel to it. I would give it 4.25, maybe 4.5 star match. It was just worked perfectly. And everything they did mattered. And the crowd, with the crowd reaction, and Gino being this just this asshole of a heel, disgusting piece of shit. And Chavo was just this, you know, the valiant, the man of right. But he ended up, the crowd didn't care that he cheated to beat Gino, because Gino's such the ultimate scumbag.
Some hero, freaking, people. Some hero.
But freaking awesome. And this was an incredible find. And again, this is one of these matches that would go down as like all-time classics, you know, if it was circulated enough. And now it is, thank God. And it's like we talk about long-lost classics. Here's another one. NWA On Demand just brings it out regularly, and this is just another example of them just freaking fastball, bam, taking it deep, man. What did you think?
Oh, well, first of all, I got to open a beer for this match, because holy shit. And it was also for the, what was it, the
NWA Junior US title.
International Junior Heavyweight.
Okay, maybe it was the Yeah, but I'm sure it's the one Chavo defended in Japan. Yeah,
well, no, but there was a belt involved, so that gave it a little extra.
Yeah.
And you knew this was important, because Chavo comes to the ring in full mariachi gear. He's got the sombrero, but he's in the full black and the tight black pants. He's in full mariachi gear, which I'd never seen before. You know, I've seen them do their Mexican revolutionary shit with the bandoleros and everything, but I've never seen him as a full mariachi, and I thought that was awesome. These are the things that I look for in wrestling, and that's an amazing touch to really give a little more importance to this match, that it's for this title, and he's coming out in his full costume. And I got to say, every time, what was it,
Rita Romero.
I just kept saying Rita Moreno every time, and I just laughed every single time, because I was picturing Rita Moreno, you know, doing this hold on in West Side Story. The hold, by the way, that Paul Bosch said that he was literally being crucified. I guess he died for our sins that day. And Luthez as ref. And at this point, Luthez looks remarkably like Walter Matthau.
He does. You're right.
Remarkably. He's like, Chavo, how many times have I told you not to pull the hair?
Terrible.
That's a great, great Matthau. Gino, I'm going to kick your ass if you stop. Don't stop cheating. Yeah, you threw me. It was a great Matthau for a minute. Anyway, here's some great Gino work. After the second fall that Gino drops, the second fall starting, and the crowd's chanting for Chavo, and Gino, and they were chanting, it was loud. He starts getting mad that they're chanting, and the chants just quadruple in their volume. So he, as a performer, took the chance for the other guy, reacted to them in a way that got that crowd to turn up their volume immensely. And that is talent. That's amazing. That's what professional wrestling is all about. The ability to do that to a crowd is tremendous, and not a lot of guys could do it, and Gino could, and it helps when you have a crowd like this. But you know, we see lots of people in front of this crowd who don't get these reactions. Gino does. Gino can make a reaction for the other guy.
Yeah, he also has a lot of Rick Rude in that sense, where he can just stare at people in a crowd and get a reaction, you know?
Yeah, but Rick Rude also had a bit of, you thought he was kind of cool, you know, and no one in that crowd was thinking, you know, it was cool, you know?
Right.
I bet you there were, but again, they probably
they weren't acknowledging it, yeah.
They were keeping their mouth shut like I would have, like I mentioned. And after Gino gets pinned the first time, the way he just lays on the mat with his face buried in the mat with his hands over his head, where it's almost like he's having a temper tantrum, but he's not being silly about it. He's not kicking his legs like a baby, but he's just laying there face down, and Thez has to like force him to answer the call, you know, like he's being a petulant child, which I thought was really, really good. And he was also selling his injury. So boom, yeah, Guerrero cheats to win. Yeah, Houston. So he's your hero. He cheats. He's a cheater. Some hero, Houston.
What do you think? Do you think there's a good chance there's a revenge spot on a previous match?
I don't know. These cheating good guys, you know.
Whatever.
I know. It's all a conspiracy against these proud warriors that you call rule breakers. I know. But so anyway, Gino attacks him with the fucking belt and just lays him out. Lays him the fuck out. And Paul Bosch is on commentary, of course, but this was obviously he did the commentary in studio after, because you see him at ringside while he's talking, and a fan does something, I'm not sure, because it's almost a fucking riot at this point. And you see Paul Bosch and you hear him turn to a fan and he goes, "Don't do that again." So I mean, he threw his soda or something, okay. But Paul Bosch turns around and he's angry, but instead of saying "you're out of here," he says "don't do that again," and I'm that'd
well,
be mean.
Well, technically it is the main event, so what's he gonna do?
Yeah, exactly. But nevertheless, though, still imagine being you're a kid there and Paul Bosch just got in your face and yelled at you. You'd probably be like, "Oh, yes, sir." And then we got Tiger Conway comes in and helps clean house, and they, you know, celebrate with Chavo. Gino tries to come back in, and he lunges over the ropes to try to take a swing at Luthez, you know, and he misses, and Thez is like, you know, "Come on, bring it, punk," and he runs away. Not only was it a great wrestling match in far as the moves and all that and the psychology, all the stuff that I like more, the trimmings, as we say, but to me, the performance that I think all that, the wrestling stuff, is the skeleton of a performance, honestly, and everything else is the meat around it. You build around it as a story, and they, every aspect of this was perfect. It was perfect. Just again, 2 weeks in a row, man. That tag match last week, and now this, two in a row. Anyone who's like saying it's like, it was like, "When are you guys gonna?" I keep reading people like in some of these threads, like, "When are they gonna put out something really, really good?" You know, everything, this is all entertaining, but what is that, something big? 2 weeks in a row, that tag match, this match. These are finds. This
classics.
Classics, you know, they're right there. I love this. This was unbelievable.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone out there, remember the Tubio app. If you want to watch it on your Roku, you can cast it from your iPhone or your Android. So Android.
Think
so
trade?
I mean, so I mean, if you're on the fence because you want to watch it on your Roku, you can. If you have an iPhone or an Android, just download that app and it's easy. A monkey can do it.
I did it.
Yeah, Johnny did it. So there you go. And you know, Lord knows what condition he was on.
No. I wasn't gonna go the high thing, although you were right. I'm not a technologically savvy guy, and I could do it, you know, so.
There we go.
And anyone could do it.
Exactly. I'm neither am I, Johnny, so that's two of us. Follow me at Titanzo Wrestling, NWAOnDemand.com. Buy it. You get the first week free. Check it out. Check all these gems out. Want to know what's on? Want to know what's on there? Go to ProWrestlingOnly.com. There's a thread there of all the matches that are on the service. It's easy to look at. It's just an amazing, amazing treasure trove of stuff to go through that could take you a long time and to go discover this incredible area of Houston wrestling. Johnny, you got anything you want to plug before we head out of here?
Actually, we're going to be using the music of a band called the Mountain Goats, who put out an album last year called Beat the Champ. That we're going to be using a track from them called, you'll hear it. It was kind of appropriate. And I highly recommend checking out the whole album. It's fantastic.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. And we'll see you next week.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, look high, is my last hope.